Well, for having me, again, welcome. So let's begin as we always do by setting our motivation and saying the preliminary prayers. So please just get comfortable in your seat. So ideally, your feet will be on a cushion on the floor. Your shoulders should be relaxed and the back reasonably straight. Just check to see if your head is sitting evenly on your neck. And if you like, you can close your eyes completely or partially. And being comfortable, allow the body to breathe itself. And being present and feeling at ease. Imagine the Shakyamuni Buddha and his spiritual entourage appear in the space before you. So the Buddha is golden in colour and he's sitting on a golden throne. You yourself are sitting on a seat and you're surrounded by all sentient beings who are also similarly seated. You recollect that everyone equally wishes to avoid suffering, equally wishes to be happy, and equally lacks genuine happiness. But the causes of suffering can be eliminated, and this potential for genuine happiness, which abides equally with all of us. Can be worked with. We can dispel the causes of suffering and we can actualize genuine happiness. But to do so, we have to abandon different phenomena, and particularly the causes of suffering. We need to adopt other phenomena that will bring about genuine happiness. In other words, a path. And so to create this path which will bring about the cessation of every cause of suffering, so all origins are completely abandoned. And that fruit called enlightenment is achieved. The thing that enlightenment here means that you have perfect wisdom, compassion, and skill that is able to help others remove the origins of their suffering. To help you, rely upon the Buddha, the Dharma, and his community. Join me in saying, I go for refuge as I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge as I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge as I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And every type of health obstacle and spiritual obstacle is removed, and the potentials of method and wisdom are empowered. You recollect the four immeasurable thoughts of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. You decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings in those states. To affirm this, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Again, imagine that lights and nectars stream forth from the heart and sin light and being adopted. And this light and nectar washes over you and all the beings surrounding you. removing obstacles and empowering their potential to become enlightened. They recollect this field of merit, which is the Buddha and the spiritual companions, desire to create more merit and to purify the mind and to increase the merit. Affirming this, join me in saying, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering I shall remember. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and all human beings. Please remain until the end of psychic existence and eternally abide from the beginnings. I dedicate my own brother's merits to the great enlightenment. To prevent the merit and the purification practices we've done from stagnating through self-grasping, recollect emptiness, the fact that everything that does exist does so independently. And being a dependent arising has no intrinsic nature. The thing that your body, speech, mind, merits, all the objects of the senses are utterly transformed through your understanding and knowledge of emptiness, reappearing as a pure land. And you want to offer this to the Buddha and his entourage. And join me in saying, this ground, anointed with perfume, stone, and flowers, dome of Mount Meru, four continents of sun and moon. I imagine this as a Buddha funeral offering. May all living beings enjoy its joy. The Buddha accepts the offering and he smiles again. Now you look up and you meet the gaze of the Buddha. And looking into his eyes, feel accepted, at ease, and confident that your path will be successful. Now the emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart and moves through space and comes to light above the crown of your head, facing the same direction you are. Now this emanation descends down to the level of your heart, whereby it begins to expand, filling your body and mind with these lights of nectars, which pour out through the pores of your skin, filling the 10 directions of space and establishing every being within space to now be within the enlightened state. Think that you're accomplishing the two purposes of Buddhahood. You've brought about your own welfare and you're presently engaged in bringing about the welfare of all beings. From the furthest reaches of space, the light begins to withdraw. It comes back and back and back and re-enters your heart. Having entered your heart, you can feel the hardness of the seat beneath you. Sounds become apparent in your own feelings and all those of it. And so this meditation of the stone is one of imagination. Nevertheless, it has imprinted the mind with conditions for awakening. The thing that you need to actually understand what creates samsara and what brings about its absence, the state called nirvana. You want to know this for your own sake and for the sake of others. So I think this is the purpose of study, is to bring about the generation of the mind of enlightenment and enlightenment itself for the benefit of all. And breathing into your nostrils, exhale through your open mouth. Permit your eyes to open to the mind. Well, I don't miss this, I'm sorry. Okay, so now we're going to this topical samsara nirvana. The books haven't changed. I keep relying on these. They're really useful, especially this book down the bottom, Samsara Nirvana, and Buddha Nature. A book that sums it all up is this very book at the bottom there, just called Buddhism, black cover. So those two would be a really good insight into this topic and quite a lot of knowledge about it. Also, we have covered. So we began by looking at samsara and nirvana. Somebody tell me what samsara is. Yeah, it's basically the cycle of rebirth, which is under the control of karma and delusion. Yeah. And so nirvana is the that's the other one, Geraldine. That was samsara.
Nirvana.
Yeah, okay. So nirvana is sort of like the opposite of it. It puts an end to all that. Sometimes there's an ultimate nature of the mind. Yeah, it's a state of mind. So in other words, the mind is without the causes of samsara. It doesn't have the afflictive states and the karma that goes with it. Then we look at the Four Noble Truths. So the truth of suffering, what's the second noble truth? Second noble truth. Yeah. The truth of origin, and then there's the truth of cessation and the truth of path. Then we looked at these three sufferings. Can somebody tell me what the three sufferings are? Oh, good. I thought you read it. You'd have to go looking through your book. So it's in there. So these things that go across over time, and these are quite, yeah, just got sort of become familiar with the terms, I guess, and try to hold them in mind and sort of know what they sort of pertain to, what they're pointing to. Then we began looking at the root delusions. Look at six of them, didn't we? And amongst those root delusions, last week we really looked at attachment. Today, we're going to be looking at anger and the three causes that produce it. Anger with the three conditions. So in actual fact, when we look at delusions, and for a delusion to arise, they need three causes and three conditions. So the delusion we could look at here is anger, which is our major one, and then go, okay, so now how does anger eventuate, what produces it? The answer is these three causes and three conditions. So we'll look at that and then see that what follows on from the anger, in other words, how the delusion generates karma. So if it was a quick explanation of this, we could say, okay, so I am angry. To become angry, three causes and three conditions are needed. But when I'm angry, then I act. And so the action is the karma. So we're looking here at how does the delusion produce the action that might follow. So if I get angry, for instance, I might strike somebody with my fist, I might kill somebody, I might say something really harsh. And that would be the action. And that's the karma. Then the action will finish and then it will produce its results later. Now, there's a couple of slides here that we saw last week, but I just want to bring it back in just to refresh your mind. So we look at the delusion in general. So a delusion in general is a mental factor that arises from distorted attention, which makes the mind unpeaceful and uncontrolled. And these mental states are our actual true and inner enemies, because their only function is to cause harm. This is also really useful to remember. Any delusion, that's its only function, is to cause you harm. So for a delusion to take hold, these six factors must be in place, the three causes and three conditions. But we'll come to those shortly. Now, distorted attention here, does anybody remember what this distorted attention refers to? I spoke about it just briefly last week. So if you've forgotten, I'll just briefly say again. So this distorted attention has manifests in two ways. When it relates to our auditory, our physical senses, right, like the vision, hearing, anything like that, whatever you hear, see, think, anything that involves your senses is going to appear to you to be that object, but also to have an intrinsic nature. So that's where it's distorted. It's like I say, because here's a clock, right? It's appearing to your eyes. So your eyesight's quite valid in saying, you know, that thing, this thing here is called a clock, right? But it's mistaken in the sense that this clock will appear to be inherently existent. And that's what it's not. So it's valid in the idea it's called a clock, but it's wrong or mistaken in that it also appears to be intrinsically existent. Now that is the most subtle way of being distorted. Mind you, even though this is the one you want to get into your head. And the way to do this is just to check it with other phenomena. So that's the very subtle distortion. The grosser distortion is that, like, if you took it for a person, so I was looking at Demi here. Yeah. And so Demi, like, I'm correct, but my eyes and my consciousness, but that's Demi, I'm not wrong there. But it's mistaken that Demi exists from her own side. Yeah, so that's the subtle one. Now, not only it follows on, but there are other qualities of Demi also appear to my mind. Right? So if I was sort of thinking, wow, Demi's this beautiful woman, where does the beauty seem to be? No, it seems to be over there. It actually is in the eye of the beholder, but it seems to be coming from there. Now, this is the same sort of thing that happens when you go looking for shoes, for instance, right? You're looking for good shoes, right? Where's the good in the shoe? It's actually here, but it seems to be there. Because then when you walk around, you look at shoes, you go, oh, there's a good pair of shoes. I like that pair of shoes. So the characteristics and qualities of the shoe seem to be coming from the shoe itself. And if you think that's a good pair of shoes, you'll not see any bad stuff about them at all. Only the good will appear. And so this is what we mean by a distorted attention. The object seems, on the most subtle distortions, it seems to have a nature of its own. It seems to just exist from its own side. The more gross distortion is the qualities appear to be in the object themselves, and they have very little to do with us.
So I reckon he'd say that a good pair of shoes have a basis of qualities.
Of goodness.
Of qualities that make it a good pair of shoes. So
still made up of this part.
Yeah, that's right. And then it also takes a mind and words to say that's good. So that's all coming from us. That's not from the side of the object.
Different shoes.
Yeah, that's right. But if they like different shoes, what they like about them will seem to be coming from the shoes.
Yes.
Yeah, so these are the two distortions that take place, the subtle level and the more obvious level. And for us, right? For ordinary people, none of this, it all looks like it's all coming from the shoe. The shoes are great. So this is this distortion that takes place. Now our definition of anger. A deluded mental factor that observes its contaminated object, exaggerates its negative characteristics, considers it to be undesirable, and wishes to harm it. I'm going to read out another definition. It's a bit shorter. And then I'll break this other one down. So you can see it still fits into this one here. Another definition of anger is that anger is a mental factor, because it's a deluded mental factor, but it is a mental factor, referring to one of three objects, agitates the mind by being unable to bear or through wanting to harm the object or person. As I said again, anger is a mental factor that, referring to one of three objects, agitates the mind by being unable to bear or through wanting to harm the object or person. I'll just break this down. So anger is a mental factor. Yeah? So it's not the main mind. These mental factors shape how the mind meets its object. But anger is not a trait. It just arises with the mind and colors it. So that the object appears like unlikable, disgusting, negative. This is referring to one of three objects. So anger is tied to three objects, each spread across past, present, and future. So now you've got nine forms of anger. In fact, there's heaps of them, but here's a simple one. You say, so the three objects are oneself, somebody that you care for, that you might call a friend, and then someone who helps your enemy. So you can say like this, he harmed me in the past. He is harming me in the present. He will harm me in the future. So we've got past, so we've got these three objects, yourself, your friend, and your enemy. And they're all going from past, present, future. So three times three is nine different objects.
It's still called anger even if it's a fleeting annoyance?
Yep. No, not just a fleeting annoyance. It's got to have these parts of reaction, have aversion to it and want to harm it. But so if you just have aversion to it, that's not anger. You want to have it, you have to have this. You don't like it, but in response it's unlikable. You want to destroy it, harm it in some way. No, it's got to have this part of it. That's what makes it anger. In fact, there's quite a lot of discussion about like anger. And so I don't, over the recent years, as holiness has had to sort of moderate it because of the way we understand anger. So the original word, of course, was hatred, and hatred and anger are quite different. Yeah? But the way the Buddhists use the language, they just put it together, so it's the same thing. Well, it's not. You know, in the Pali tradition, they go, there's hatred and there's anger. When you look at the three root delusions, it's actually hatred. But that's the deep thing. But just because of the way they've translated it, they use the same word for anger and hatred. But we don't.
And that can still pass. A person who feels anger or hatred, yeah, can down the track change their mind.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. It has to sort of agitate the mind. So anger disturbs the mind, it breaks its calm. Its role is to churn the mind and drive the harmful acts. It's termed by being unable to bear. The mind cannot stand the person, the event, or its own pain. This I can't take this. This I can't take this mode covers this rejection that there's no clear wish to harm. Now you can have irritation, annoyance, disgust, but there's no wish to harm there. But once that wish to harm comes in, now you've got anger. Because you might be annoyed at something and then get angry. Or be disgusted and be angry. These things lead very quickly to the other. And you have disgust and you want to like harm the person that you're disgusted with or harm the situation in some way. The element of harm has to be there. If that's not there, you can't call it anger.
I feel that we don't often wish to harm. It's societal or because we're Buddhists, but I very rarely wish to harm even though people upset me.
Yeah, so I wish to harm. I mean, this is the thing, you've got to check yourself, right? Like, yes, there are times when you don't wish to do it, but there are other times when you do.
I haven't for ages.
Okay, that's good. But again, Geraldine, just remember, when you haven't felt like that for ages, doesn't mean to say that you might not feel like that in the near future. Right? This is true, isn't it? Just like you're saying. Yeah, Miffy used to say to me often, I'm so angry. I'm looking at going, I don't wish to harm you. I don't wish to destroy anything. Yeah, my tone has risen, these sort of things. I'm averse to what's happening. But there's no wishing to sort of harm. But this is why I say these two parts have to be there.
Could I ask the group if they feel it? Because I've often wondered when enemies are mentioned, I think, but I don't have enemies and I don't think I'm special or anything. I mean, yeah. When I wish that my enemies be happy and be so free, I think of one person.
Yeah, so again, so it's what we, because of the words used. So enemies might just not mean, you know, this, but we have the idea of what an enemy is. So it might just be the fact that somebody does something hurtful to you, and that's what they call an enemy. You know, that's not what we would call an enemy, doesn't it? No. So the other thing I'd say, so with the six root delusions that we've been covering, we're just in the second one, there are what they call the 20, there are 20 other delusions associated with these six. So you go through those and you can see, oh, this is related, this could be related to anger and ignorance. Or this one is both related to attachment and ignorance. Or this one is just associated with attachment. This one is just with ignorance. This one just with anger. So there's all these sort of shades, I guess. So you don't even know by picking up those books and sort of going through them. But they, like I said, they've got quite a different way of looking at what we call disturbing emotions. So the two motives for anger to arise are you can't bear it anymore. That's what they say when they talk about the perfection of patience is called perfection of forbearance. But so you can see to be able to forbear something is you do not go the other way with aversion. So we have this thing of aversion and then wish to harm. And forbearance, if you can bear it, you won't have that wish to harm. It's difficult, of course, to do it, but the wish to harm is not there. So anger is a state, it's not a behavior, because one can look calm but be crazy inside, raging inside. So, and anger rests on this distorted view. And what does it do? It blows up the faults of others. As I say, you look at somebody else, you see their behavior, you think they are their behavior. That's what most of us do. We don't say, oh, but their behavior is pretty poor, they act angrily. We say, no, they're angry, angry people. So we push it together like this, and it really does look, the person themselves is angry. But this is, of course, again, this is all a distortion. But that's what it looks like to us, and we most often go along with it. And I'll show you why that we go along with it, because in many ways it's encouraged the whole world. So most of the world sees it that way. But that's one of the conditions that supports our anger. So anger cannot fuel virtue. Now, we say that because when we talk about someone's righteous justice, right? Or it was right to become angry to make these changes. But so this is why there's a lot of discussion between Holiness and the Buddhists. It's all really looking at what we mean by anger, what the Buddhists mean, and how the meaning has changed over centuries. You see, ourselves, we think of that we've got to be angry to make changes. But there's a lot of problems all over the world, aren't there? Political changes, political things, there's wars everywhere. And we want to stop them. Yeah, okay, so how are we going to stop them? So you might find that's your anger towards these people creating these situations that gets you out on the street. And so this was, so it's said, you know, by having this type of energy, the energy of anger going out that can help us change social situations. And the Buddhists are like you don't need to be angry to do that. You can still want to do that and do all that, but do it without anger. Because if you have the anger there, you might stop one war, but you've got enough here to cause another, haven't you? Okay, so let's have a business. So there are three, there are actually what they call six conditions. What I've done here is broken up into three causes and three conditions. It just makes it easier to remember groups of three than groups of six. And these have to be here, these three here. If they're not there, you're not going to get angry. So these phenomena are called the seed, which is just like the potential to become angry. So what they call the latent delusion. In other words, you have a potential to become angry, but it's not manifest now. Well, all of us do that. I mean, if one of us I'd come across here just had a hammer and said, put your hand out and bang your finger, we weren't angry before I hit you. You're going to get angry, right? That just tells me, okay, I've got the predisposition to become angry. That's what they mean by the seed. You need an object. If you don't have an object of anger, you can't become angry. And thirdly, this distorted or inappropriate attention, that has to be there. Let's have a look, I'll go through each one of these. So the seed is a dormant energy or a potential left over from previous moments of affliction. So what this means is that, you know, we've all been angry, right? At one stage of our life, we've been angry. And then our anger stopped. We're not that angry now, are we? But that anger, once it stops, that's called the seed. There's a potential now for you to become angry again. All you got to do is meet the conditions. It's not right now, it's dormant, right? Like I said, we might come around and hit you with a hammer, it'll be jumping straight up, right? So we've got that potential to become angry. Without the potential, without the seed, you can't become angry. Does this make sense to you? This is like saying, you know, that Buddhist often use the idea of if you don't have a barley seed, you can't grow barley. You don't have the seed of anger, well, you can't become angry. Right? The seed of barley is the potential to produce a barley shoot and plant. Our seed of anger is the potential for us to kill, to do all sorts of bad things.
Will that seed always be a past life karma sort of thing?
Yes, it's been created in the past, but we can create new ones in the present.
Add to
it. Yeah, for sure. That's right. Like today, if we got angry today, you know, once we would stop being angry. Here's the seed. Well, to become triggered, that's what they're talking about, you're triggering the seed.
Yes.
Right? So that's the condition.
It's not overdone, is it? You're just aware that it's lying in there.
That's right. So what one of the things that you need to trigger the seed is an object.
Oh.
Yeah.
You won't invite them.
No, don't. Okay. I just, you know, I have to prove the AI. I'll describe it and it produces this picture for me. Now this... So, of course, the object is the conducive condition that awakens that seed into a fully active affliction. So you're all sitting there, right? I've gone around. Put your hand out there, mate. And went bang, right? Now, you saw all that. You see, oh, my gosh. Like this, right? Now, all of you, I'm sure, would start to get worried. Right? So what are you worried about? You go, that fellow with a hammer. Not me. I'm the condition. I'm the object that you're all afraid of. Right? So I said before, you know, he harmed me in the past. He's harming me in the present. He'll harm me in the future.
Even though he hasn't harmed.
No, that's right. These are the objects.
The
complete past of all the lives you've had. And of course, there's only one present, the one we're presently experiencing. Yeah. And the future, of course, we haven't yet experienced it. But we can be afraid of problems in the future, couldn't we? Yeah, it's a type of empathy. Yeah. And this is why many times, empathy is not, it's a doorway to compassion. But gee, just think if you just held on to the empathy, how gee, it would be. So it's good for us, wouldn't it? We want more than just empathy, yeah. Yeah, so the objects are he harmed me, is harming me, or will harm me. That harms my friends, they're harming my friends, they will harm my friends in the future. They helped my enemies in the past. They helped the people who hurt me. They are helping the people who are hurting me. They will help the people who are hurting me. The past, present, and future, and yourself, a close friend, and the enemy, but, you know, helping others hurt you. So these are your objects. You've got 9 objects here. And then we come to the inappropriate attention or the distorted attention. So this is a mental act of focusing on the object and exaggerating its qualities. In the terms of anger, of course, it's the negative qualities. If it were attachment, it'd be the positive qualities. But either way, it's distorted. It's always distorted. It always looks like it's coming from the object itself and not from your own mind. It superimposes a level of badness or attractiveness onto objects. And again, once you do this, if you put like, if I was looking at Geraldine with like attachment, at the very same time, anger would not be arising towards her. So only Geraldine's good qualities shine forth for me with attachment, only her negative with anger. And yet we know that the people are made up of a number of different qualities. So it's not just one. Again, this is a distortion. You don't get a complete picture, you get a partial picture. It's either on the positive side or the negative side, and it always seems to be coming from the object. That is, we have the intrinsic nature. So do you have, this is the mental act of focusing on the object and exaggerating its qualities. Again, remember the exaggeration is of two types, subtle and gross. The subtle is that the object appears to have an intrinsic nature or an independent nature. Or to, you could say it appears to not depend upon anything. It's right there. It doesn't require anything from me. And it looks great or it looks very poor. Yes, you could look at somebody who is attractive and become angry at them, because you're not attractive, or they're more attractive than somebody else you think should be.
Yes, because you know, they won't like you, so you get angry at them because of their beauty, because you like them.
Could be. The thing with this, with the story of attention, this, you put this on, all the stories take off. You start making up all the stories afterwards. These three come together. The story comes one into all of the stories about the object.
With Geraldine's example of when you like someone, but then you can't have them, is it more like the attachment flips to anger?
Yeah.
Rather than anger as, it wasn't anger to begin with. You were attached to them, you really wanted them, you really wanted to possess them, but you couldn't have them, so then it flipped into anger?
That's right. So you have, no, I can't have it, so you become averse to them. And then maybe you don't like this at all, and it will deepen, and you might want to even harm them. If you look at history, there's plenty of stories just like this, isn't there? Yeah, that's how husbands killing their wives, for instance.
Yes.
That happens a great deal, and this is a process. So basically, I'll just through. So first is this dormant seed, right? And this is a lingering habit from past reactions, which is now stored in the mind. Then we have the triggering object, such as a person or event that catches your attention. And then there's these other conditions that come into place, and there's also this distorted attention. So our attention on the objects, right, we exaggerate the quality of the object or the situation. You make it better or worse than it actually is. Anything you'd like to ask at all about these the three causes? So I've got room, seed, object. Now the seed here, the seed is just waiting. Once you've been angry once, right, and you stop, you don't keep angry all the time, right? Now you've left this potential on your mind stream.
Just waiting for something.
Yeah, waiting for the right conditions to come along. Yeah. So these sort of things, you know, it's just what you've done. This is the way to do it, to try and fit it into situations in your own life. You know, to go, oh, yeah, that's how the mind worked. If it was like that. You know, I wasn't angry. Then the object, at least in this case, said or did something, and then where my attention held that, this what happened? No, that's the great thing. Because if they did, no, so this is the idea of using the wisdom of emptiness. The wisdom of emptiness destroys all these afflictive seeds. There are different types of seeds that seeds of the afflictions and then seeds of karma. So when we acted on, you know, when we got angry, we acted. That was an act, right? Whether it was a verbal act or a mental act, maybe you imagined a whole lot of stuff you'd like to do to them. That's an action. Once that action is finished, you've got a new seed. And that's, but those seeds can all be wiped out. That's the whole idea of doing these purification practices.
Is it if you're actually raving, you do this, you do that, the other thing, you're not wishing harm, but there is harm because of what's going on in your own mind.
Again, like if we're careful here, to actually what is going on in your mind.
Yeah.
It's not so easy to discover, is it? Or to discern, right? It takes quite a bit of work.
Yeah.
Actually know what's going on in your mind. In fact, I heard, I've been watching some shows on the internet about this fellow coming all this week. He's going to be teaching here. Yeah, so one of his talks, he was saying, like we memorize the 51 mental factors. Remember, we said anger is a mental factor, and there's all these things are mental factors. So the idea is to memorize them first so you know what each one is. But then it's like, and like he said, and now what? It's a how do you use what you've memorized with your mind? You know, if you know anger is this, you know all these factors come together, how do you work with that to discover, like, is that true? Yeah, so it takes you can see it takes a bit of work, doesn't it? You've got to know the stuff, the factors first, you've got to know what their definitions are, how they work, and then you've got to try it out on yourself. Because if you don't do that, you won't have a way of stopping these delusions. The idea of discussing how they exist in relation to cause and effect is because if you know how they're produced, you can break them down. That's the only way. So if you want to destroy an airplane, it's a good idea to know how an airplane actually works. Right? If you want to kill a person, it's the same thing, isn't it? If you want to do something to something, you want to know a bit about that something, you want to do something to. So this is the idea here. You have to sort of know what the mind is, what these factors are. Okay, now try and use them. And what the Tibetans do was very much to stop what you do, Charlie. Just look at your life and you go, okay, so this is what happened then. Oh, that's what that would be called then. And then this took place. Oh, that's what that's called. Because I'm sure for most of us, this is quite new, isn't it? But it's quite detailed too. And so the idea is, like I said, if you know how something comes into existence, you can make it go out of existence. It's like if you know what makes a plane fly, you can stop it flying. The idea is, if we know how our delusions create our suffering, then we can stop them creating the suffering.
One of the reasons I discovered Buddhism was because I was really infuriated with someone. And it was interesting because even though I never physically harmed them, and I don't remember being verbally abusive or anything like that, what I really remember is how much pain I felt internally, like mental pain and suffering. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's like, even it was there was definitely an element of wanting to harm that person, even if I didn't do it outwardly. Because otherwise, why would I have felt so horrible inside?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I use it to identify that anger.
Yeah,
I think I was just lucky that I restrained myself.
Yeah, well, that's the first thing, just restraint. just don't follow it. And while we're not, there's a bit of peace, and then like study, try and work this stuff out. You know, once you sort of get your handle on this cause and effect, it's like this, it's empowering, but it's also sort of horrible in a way. Because what you see is how much people hurt themselves.
Yes.
And they've got no idea they're doing it.
Yes.
It's terrible. So I think it's like, you know, imagine you're in a relationship with someone and they're hurting themselves. Then they're going to hurt you, aren't they? Because if a person has no respect for themselves and willing to hurt themselves, expect them to hurt you.
Well, they're hurting you because you're suffering.
No, they're hurting you because they're suffering.
Exactly. That is.
Yeah. And it's and they often don't know. They think of something else causing their suffering. They don't realise, no, it's the way you've been thinking and behaving. That's what's causing the suffering. And they often look outward to other conditions, other causes. But here it's saying, no, and this is the idea of getting these, you know, causes, conditions down. You know, have I got something in here that can make me angry? Do I feel angry now? You know, no. What would it take to be angry then? You know, you could have somebody do something at you, or you could start thinking. And you could go, oh, so actually I don't need somebody out there, because just thinking about them, like I want to do something bad to them. You go, gee, it's there, isn't it? I've got it. Do I need something out there? Yeah, okay, so now what about the conditions? I said, well, the condition was just thinking of that person. If they appeared before me, that would be the condition again. This is right. Now, when I apprehend them, when I place my awareness on them, how do I think of them? How do they appear to me? And you see, oh, they're bad people from their side. But nothing to do with me. Just like whenever they appear, you just go, whoa. But you'll notice not everybody does that. So there must be something not quite right here, right? Can't be from their own side, because from their own side, everybody would hate them, but they don't. So, and you know, the lovely thing about distorted awareness is you can just write the awareness. That's the whole idea of using loving kindness. Instead of seeing that odd moment where they hurt you, look at all the times they helped you. Remember how that they're not under their own control, yet they're trying to help us. And even when their bad behavior is bad towards us, that's really useful for us, because we can practice patience or forbearance, another great mental quality. So there's all these other ways of looking at them rather than just the one way. And I remember this was Holiness was saying about what delusions do, they narrow your perspective. But you don't see the bigger picture. If it's aversion and anger, you can only see the negative, all the bad stuff they did. That's all you think about, that's all you see. If it's the other, if it's attachment, no, then it's all the good. So we can, this is the idea, so play with this stuff with your own experience. So you go, oh my gosh, it is like this. Because, you know, this material is meant to be used by us, right? It's not just for intellectual amusement or to tell other people about how the mind works and all that stuff. So let's look now at these other three conditions. Well, we're pretty good at being unhappy, aren't we? It's very easy to become unhappy. As long as those three causes are there, you're definitely going to have an affliction, and they are required, the three causes. Conditions are society, the media, and habits. Often when you go and look at other texts, sometimes they might use different words, but if you now see six, you'll see something there. Okay, so social, so society, or what they call social distraction, or social influence. Now, this is the primary condition that causes the mental delusions to arise. It occurs when we associate with unwise company. So sometimes they have the term like unhelpful friends. Because we as humans seek approval, we easily absorb the attachments and aversions of our peers. This turns our social circle into a trigger for our own emotional distress. This is that's like a healthy person walking into a room full of sick people. You're likely to catch the cold. If everybody else has got a cold and you don't, and you go in, you're going to catch it. So bad company contributes to us acting badly. That's why what you often find is when you become a Buddhist, how few friends you have, they all fall away. Oh. That's what you probably have. Most of your chats might be here, and you feel really quite at ease amongst us, but to others, it's like it changes. So associating with unwise company, this is one of the conditions. Now another condition is what's called the media. So information and media act as powerful stimuli that awaken the dormant mental disturbances. Yeah, just like you, that's what I was going about. Man, the rubbish TV I watch, all the violence, and you know, you've got to go, that's coming in, right? You're bringing this material into your vessel, into the vessel of the human mind. Yes. Yeah, that's right. You've been so careful watching. Yeah, you have to take it. Yeah, it's quite distressing. I remember this happened many years ago where a Vietnamese man, his children kept on watching TV all the time, right? And he raised a hand, asked Esther, what can I do about it? Is this a good thing or it was thinking it was a bad thing, you know? And Gessler said, oh no, it's not this interesting thing. There's the TV and the news is not the bad thing. It's how the mind relates to it. It's always how the mind relates. So he was saying, okay, if you have aversion and da-da-da, turn the TV off. If your states are getting agitated, then don't watch TV. But if you've had a little bit of practice, when you see these terrible things happening, then you can generate compassion. You know, the stories we see on TV, they're all suffering, aren't they? Right? And for most of us, it's aversion. It's like too much, overwhelmed. So, shut it down. But this is where this practice of forbearance arises. You know, if we can just bear this, know that this is our reality, this is a samsaric reality. The response here should be compassion. Of course, so don't think, oh, I can't do that, so I'm not compassionate. It's not true. We've all got some compassion, but we need to train in it. That's the thing. It's the only thing that makes it strong and be able to bear the different types of suffering. And yeah, and the suffering that we see, isn't it, on the television, is just the suffering of suffering. You know, we know, like, you know, we've got to go deeper and go, that's because these people have no control over their body, speech, and mind. Oh, the poor people wanting to be happy, but working completely against their happiness. They're destroying other people's lives, cities, countries. Why? To get their own way, to be happy. Yeah, that's not working out. So I've got wrong ideas, you know? So because I've got the wrong ideas, we can have compassion for them. You know, they think hatred will stop hatred, war will stop war. It never has, has it? It's not like if you can't use your both negative methods, you can't bring a positive in none of these two negatives. So here's it. So the key insight is the mind digests information exactly as the body digests food. We vastly underestimate how our daily intake of news, movies, and internet normalizes destructive behaviors and actively feeds our mental agitation. The media is like fertilizer, spreads it across a garden. You pour it onto the weeds of your dormant habits by consuming violent or greedy content, those negative emotions will quickly overgrow the state of peace. In fact, when I started watching last night, I've never seen it before, it's been very old, it's called The Band of Brothers. It's a sort of a war series based around a group of American soldiers and the landing D-Day and then the story, right? So I watched three episodes last night. So I thought, that's it. I'm not watching any more. I had enough. Just the violence and the killing is so full on. You know, I just thought, gee, it's going to be episode after this because that's what happened there. I watched, the first two of those, really interested in the psychological states of the soldiers, the discipline and how you work against the discipline, all the psychology, that was great. But just to watch bombs going off and bullets and people dying, last thing at night, I don't think I want to keep doing some things like that. Third condition is habit. In other words, like I said, our minds follow the path of least resistance. So you got to just check yourselves, right? When you see things and then speak about them, is the mind or the speech often towards the negative or towards the positive? Are you finding faults in things? Like I know people, you can say something good about something, they reply with something bad about it. There's lots of people like that, aren't there? I would hope so, Geraldine, but I don't think so. I said, depends who your company is.
That's right.
That's why it's important to sort of find a company that's more uplifting than dragging you down. So. And same with the media. So I know one of our students here, she's going through a really difficult time. And what she did, she decided to just watch comedy shows on television. So she does no more news, no more this, it's just comedies. Like, lift yourself up, have a laugh. Yeah, that's a very simple way to change the thing. So, for us, it's the idea of, they say often, isn't it, when you begin as Dharma, it's like, find out, first of all, what's your worst habit you've got? What's your major mental affliction? What's the one you're most familiar with? Then you can look at, well, how do you produce it? Because as you know before, you're going to need objects. So here we have these three. We have, what was it? Social distraction or society, the media, and habituation, habits. These three conditions. So our social influences sustain the cycle of confusion. Well, they can do, social influences can. So, you read this, there's a thing on overseas and probably here too. It's a young man's movement.
Oh,
yeah, I know, incels and...
Well, it's one where they're all about masculinity.
Yeah, yeah. It's a toxic masculinity, right? So there's young men and they've got their own internet sites and that, and they're just really poor behaviour. And bad ideas, but it gets them views, and they're turning the views into money, of course. Yeah? So this is the sort of thing that a lot of young people are being influenced by these people. Yeah, so these come together. So let's do our first meditation. The fact that if you have, Geraldine's example, right? So you have a number of different people at the gym. But these two people there, that when you say anything to them, how do they respond? And it's in the negative, it's a downer, right? So that's the least resistance. It's hard for them to think of anything positive or even to agree that something is that. Why? Because they often look for the fault. And that's their habit. And so it's very easy to go down that pathway. I thought non-virtue would be really hard.
Yeah.
In fact, I was, thought I'd be a bad person actually growing up. That's the hard thing to do. Right? And it was, but it is a little bit hard, because you have to convince yourself to hurt people. This is not an easy thing to do. So when that sort of thing came up, it's like, now I don't really want to do that. I thought actually being non-virtuous would be quite difficult. It's not that difficult, but you run into a place where you just can't go forward. You run up against your own conscience, basically, and in a way. But virtue, I think, is quite hard because you think, well, first of all, it depends upon the motivation. So how many of us are aware of the motivation of why we're doing the things we're doing? Is there really virtue there to do it? Well, the negative, you bet you got all the parts of the place. You want to hurt that person. You want to do this to them. All the parts of the negative mind are actually very easy to bring up, but not with the virtuous mind. Yeah, very easy to be vengeful, isn't it? Very difficult to forgive. I remember this many years ago, somebody might have heard of this guy called Edward de Bono, and how he just demonstrated how thinking worked. He just got a piece of paper and he crumpled it up, and then he got a fountain pen that had ink in it and just squirted the ink into it. And you could watch it and you open it up and it made this pattern. So the ink found the easiest way to run down through the paper. That's how the brain works too. It finds what's easy. And that's how you, develop a habit. You just do this easy thing a few times. And then you go, oh, the mind just goes, oh, the brain. Oh, that just goes, oh, that's the way you do this.
Yeah.
It'll just do it.
It's much easier to watch an hour of TV than actually go to the gym or sit on the machine and lift weights.
Much. Yeah, that's right. Okay, this is our first meditation, guys. We're just, just settle the body. Let your body relax, drop your shoulders. And then just set an altruistic aim to understand your mind so that you can help everyone you meet. Now, have you ever wondered why the same frustrations follow us through life? Our difficult emotions are not random. Difficult emotions arise from specific causes. And if you understand the pattern of their arousal, you can stop being surprised by your reactions and begin to master them. And this will give your mind is like a clear lake that only becomes cloudy when the wind stirs the silt. So moments of irritation can feel very solid and very real. Using your understanding of the three causes, why is that the case? That moments of irritation feel solid and so real. Because our inappropriate attention turned a small fault into a total disaster. So we often think that persons are the causes for our problems. But what if the people are merely triggers for habits that we've carried for years? We need to find the inner seeds, the inner causes for our suffering. Can you recognize how people around us can influence us? So we often absorb the emotions of others without realizing it. So if you became familiar with these six factors that cause a disturbance to arise, you can become familiar with these. How might this influence your behavior and your knowledge of the disturbing emotions? In other words, how would you act knowing that your delusions arise from those six factors? Right? You might feel much lighter. You would know that fire has no fuel, or that fire has no power without fuel. So, this evening, when you feel a surge of emotion, name one of the causes. Name one of the causes, name one of the conditions. This act of naming is like turning on the light in a dark room. Things become clear. And just try to carry this investigative spirit throughout the day. So, okay, without looking at the notes, what are the three causes for a delusion? What three causes are required for a delusion to arise? You must have a
C.
Great. Okay. What else do you need? You need
object.
An object. Excellent. And then you need your attention to be
distorted
or inappropriate. Right? Great. That's excellent. So you got C, object, and distorted attention. You got the seed, that's the past thing. You've got a present object and how the mind is related to it. Now, conditions that really support delusions, can you remember? So there's three of them. Which ones can you remember?
Society.
Society, excellent. There's the media. It's not hard, right? So when you do have a disturbing emotion, just pause right there and see. Go through it, go, okay. So I felt this, I'm experiencing disturbing emotions, I actually have a cause for it. But if I didn't have the cause, it couldn't happen. And so the cause is there. That's what they call the seed, right? This potential for me to experience that exists because I have experienced it. What were the conditions that supported it? What else took place? What was the object? Another object. Yeah, it will be to harm if it's anger, right? But it might be, wow, maybe it's just the way I was thinking about something. Right? So these are object. Or maybe it was you just met somebody did something. Or could be something in the media, you read something, could be all those sort of things. This is the way about breaking it down for yourself. And gives you distance from it and gives you a chance to work with it. Now, the next section is this thing about karma, because these illusions create actions. Right? So we're here with this delusion, we've created an affliction or a delusion, and then even that is an action, right? But it can also lead to physical and verbal actions. And when they take place, we have karma. So what's karma? It's a mental intention. So even karma often simply says it's an action. Karma refers to action, and that's true. It is action, but what type of action? It's the action of intention. And it's the intention that drives our physical, verbal, and mental beings. If action occurs internally before any outward movement happens. Because actions are fundamentally rooted in mental intentions, we can alter our future reality by changing the distorted views and disturbing emotions that drive our daily choices. And comes down to it, it's as simple as that. Change your mind, change your thinking, then the behaviors will change too. That's karma. And the delusions, of course, produce these karma, right? So karma is often the seed or this potential that we've already created, the act has already been created in the past. A potential for something to happen still exists within us. We're not aware of it, it's not obvious to us, but it's there. That potential is there. Then, action. And consequence. Okay, now the process of producing the karma. So it begins with confusion. Now, this is what I was saying before about how the senses work. Right? This is written, I mean, when I understood this, it was like it was a big wow moment, and it helps you understand so much of what happens to you. So I said, this confusion obscures our way of seeing. It makes us see things as not dependent, solid, objective, all those sort of things like that, rather than being interconnected, interdependent, connected. And again, like I said, so for instance, there's these simple things you can do. I've done this thing before in classes. So if we look up here, we've got these, I don't know what they're called, but they're yellow, aren't they? They're colored, they're if we were to look for the colour of that fabric, how does the colour of the fabric appear to us?
Yellow.
Yeah, it's yellow, right? Where's the yellow? It's over there, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. It actually appears over there. Now, if you go to actually look to find it over there, it's not over there. This colour is dependent upon light, for instance. If there's no light, you're not going to see the yellow, right? You'll never know what colour it is. So one of the things we need is the light. And it needs a particular type of light for it to appear yellow, otherwise it's not going to appear yellow. Not only do you need the light, you need these eyes and this biology and this nervous system and this mind. You get a bird or a pig or a dog and go, what are you looking at? What colour is that? Yellow is not going to appear over there to them, I tell you. So the yellow looks like it's over there. We think it's over there and we believe it's over there. That's what they mean by confusion. The first thing is confusion. Because even though it appears over there, it's not over there. Even though it appears to be over there, it's not over there, we believe it's over there. So when we talk about this, like there's things existing from their own side, true existence, inherent existence, all those terms, right? All of them are pointing to a reality that's objective and not dependent on us. But like I said, it is not objective. It's like subjective. It's dependent. The object, what that object is and how it appears to us, is dependent upon light, all sorts of dyes and things like that are there, and our nervous system and our language. Because until you say yellow, there's no yellow there. And so there's a lot of dependencies here. But if you look at how does it appear to us, not as a dependent arise, it's not independent of us. Yellow looks like it's there, we're here, we access yellow. So it looks like to me. Any different to you? No. So we're here, it's there, and it has its own reality. So that it's not true, but we think it is. That means you're already confused about how the thing exists. If you look at yourself, if you apply this analysis to yourself, you'll see that it feels like and it seems to you, and you will believe it, is if you're right here and the world is right there. Everything else is out there called the world, there it is. That's how it seems to be. And we believe it. Because it's not. It's the thing. So from this confusion, but this belief in it is called grasping. So, you know, when we do the wisdom realizing emptiness, we have to identify what's false, which is intrinsic existence. That's not the problem. The problem is that we believe in the intrinsic nature, which is called grasping. So we've got two things. We refute the intrinsic nature, we can't grasp it, it's not there, never was there. That's really useful. So out of our confusion comes a belief. And remember, when we're confused, we don't think we're confused. We think we're fine, everything's working properly. And so we believe that. And everything's fine, everything's working properly. And one of the things that happens is this is what we but the Texas calls splitting. A split takes place.
Of between the texts.
Yeah, the texts, right?
Texans.
Yeah. So what's the split? The split is me and the world, you and I, self and other. It's all these things that we seem to be completely independent of one another. The big one here is self and other, right? Because once self is spread off from the world, guess what's going to happen? You're going to get scared. That's what happens, it's fear. The fear arises. The fear produces all the afflictions. Then some things we need to prop ourselves up, I think we've got to get away from. Because they'll destroy us.
This is what they call the dualistic mind.
This is a dualistic mind. Yeah. There's a dualism. The dualism took place here at the splitting level. But in response to the dualism, comes these ways of emotional states. From that, of course, do we have an action? Actions follow.
So, I mean, negative karma or positive ending?
Positive and negative. Yeah. Yes, you can, instead of taking out the affliction there, you might put down something more positive, but it still comes out of the confusion, the grasp, and it's, you know, it'll still have that thing. But it produces the action will follow and it'll produce a good effect, but it'll always be in cyclic existence. The suffering causes are right there with you. You have the ignorance stemming from the confusion, you have the affliction, and you have the action, the karma. Okay, this is quite a simple little model, but I thought it demonstrates it quite simply and easy to get your head around.
I'm too excited, I forgot what I
wanted. That's okay, that's okay.
Oh, ignorance.
Yeah.
The confusion
goes swing spirit. Yeah, so ignorance here is terms in the confusion. This is the model there for the ignorance, not confusion. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, with this one here, what's useful to take away from this? You have to actions that take place are not just fate, but are the results of a predictable sequence. By filtering your media and social environments, you can cut off the fuel for future negative deeds, which is exactly what we're doing, isn't it? Like, I don't want to have my mind engaged with these negative things. Understanding that actions are formed at the level of intention helps us catch mental reactions before they escalate into physical or verbal deeds. The things you can do is to just select a recent negative action you performed and just trace it backwards. That's a really simple thing you can do. It really helps you go, oh gosh, if I don't want to do it again, I can see the trajectory. Select a recent negative action you performed, trace it backwards, identify the intention that drove it, the emotion that fueled the intention, and the specific conditions. You know, could be a habit, could be a really stressful environment, could be inappropriate attention, what will be, but definitely inappropriate attention. Another thing you can do is intentionally remove one external cause of delusion from your routine. So that could be like media or unhelpful or bad friends. You know, this guy, okay, I'm not going to spend tomorrow with those people, or tonight I'll stop my television watching right here. You observe how the reduction in the condition leads to fewer disturbing emotions. Now, for that to work, you need to do it more than just one day. If you do it for like 3 or 4 days, even up to a week, you might notice, oh, my mind is much calmer. That's so agitated.
So, Eddie, with what you're saying about applying it to your life, by understanding how anger arises, like let's take, for example, if my kids have a messy room. If I can understand how I'm distorting that whole situation, I can still talk to my family members about, you know, oh, the room needs to be clean, but I remove the element of anger so it's less, yeah. There's no chance of it being harmed and me causing harm to myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, let's finish off on our last meditation. Okay, again, just get comfortable in the seat. Check that the spine is elongated, the shoulders are relaxed. And set an altruistic intention to discover a piece that you can share with everyone. So have you felt your life follows familiar patterns or loops? But you're not a victim of fate, but you are an architect of your future through your intentions. If you see this and acknowledge it, you don't need to fight so hard to get what you want. Just pay attention to the quality of your mind. You imagine your mind as a fertile field that stretches towards a calm and open horizon. Are you aware that every thought is like a seed falling into that soil? The mind holds each intention for a future experience. It's like a record that will one day play back as your reality. But if you plant a seed of irritation, can it ever grow into the plant of peace? The answer is no, because the result must match the intention that created it. If you choose a thought of kindness now, what future are you starting to build? So you're creating the causes for a life of warmth, balance, and ease. It's almost like a traveler who clears their path so they can walk safely. So what can you practically do using this information? Well, when you're under pressure, just pause for a few breaths. Pausing for 3 breaths, you hold freedom in those very moments. And breathing in through your nostrils. Exhale, and open your eyes. So before I finish off here, there is a really simple thing that you can do. Like I said before, to just create the causes for your own happiness. I find this quite straightforward and simple. You know, so wherever you are, wish that people be happy and have the causes of happiness. Wherever you are, wish that they do not suffer and have the causes that produce the absence of suffering. Because you know, like, all of us want to be happy, don't we? None of us want to suffer. Everyone's like that. So if you think this, if you deliberately stop yourself down, and just wherever you're sitting, you know, think it. May they be happy and may they have the causes of happiness. May they be free of suffering and may they know the causes for freedom. Each time you do that, you're creating the mind of love or the mind of compassion. So we benefit immensely just by thinking that. It's not a hard thought to have. It's a really good to say. It meets the facts because we want to be happy, we don't want to suffer. So it's a valid thought, right? Nothing wrong with this type of thought. You could also add, go further if you want to, know that we have all Buddha nature, know that disturbing emotions aren't of the nature of the mind. You can add the next immeasurable. And finally at the end you can use immeasurable equanimity. Anyway, for today, we know the three causes and three conditions necessary to create an affliction, and then how they lead to action. So read anything you can. This material is common to many of the texts. In fact, the first one I read, this was Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa talking about, I think they're called Wisdom Knowledge 2 or something. It's about 30 years old now. They first bought it out of it. Try to memorize these six causes. You know? They're not hard to, and they become so much easier to remember when you apply them yourself. If you do it to yourself, it becomes simple. And finally, next week, we've got a big class next week. We're going to look at these 12 links, how they unfold over two or three lifetimes, and these throwing and actualizing karma. So quite a big class. We'll just do the best we can. You know, this is an introduction anyway, so we don't need to get everything in depth and know it all. Okay. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Really great to talk about this material with you. Okay, we've put time into it, we've put energy into it, we've been thinking about it. We're going to apply it. So let's dedicate all of this to enlightenment for the benefit of all. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of the Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception to that enlightened state. And we know this enlightened state depends upon a mind of enlightenment, and so this is summed up here. May the Supreme Jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born or rise, may that ball have no decline, but increase over more. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. In the prayer for as long as his long life, the wish granting, wish fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness of this world, to the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And now a prayer for Rinpoche's swift return. In holding and spreading the Buddha's precious and complete teachings for explanation and practice, he wore the armor of patience and never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, you and make this practice. Okay, so thank you, everyone. Thank you, Sandy. Love to see you today.